Welcome to the Leverage Podcast, where we give you men's dating advice that doesn't suck. I'm your host, Robbie Kramer, a former finance guy, online poker pro, and highly ranked collegiate golfer before I became obsessed with understanding attraction and passionate about teaching men how to improve their love lives. Tune in each week where we'll give you the latest and greatest strategies to get more dates, make yourself more attractive and confident with the opposite sex in order to meet your perfect 10, and design a lifestyle that makes all your buddies jealous. If you're a regular listener and digging our content, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, wherever you watch or listen to this. But if you don't think it's worthy of 5 stars, just go ahead, don't leave any review at all. If you're new to the show, I recommend you download my dating protocol. It'll help you optimize your first dates and subsequent dates. I like to connect with my listeners personally, so if you want to pick up a copy of that PDF, please direct message me on Instagram at Robbie_Kramer. Before we dive into this week's content, I want to let you guys know we've opened up a few slots in our exclusive community called Leverage. We are accepting applications if you want to join our select group of men and experience the radical power of accountability to step up your game, cross off everything on your sexual bucket list, and become a beast at accomplishing your goals. To learn more and apply, go to innerconfidence.com/leverage. Now let's dive into this week's content. Cheers.
Cheers, Robbie.
Welcome, Guillaume.
From France to Austin, Texas. I'm a converted Did you bring that cowboy.
Hat? You brought that hat all the way from France,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, they tested it for drugs at the airport, but I got through.
You made it through. That's shocking. Yeah. So, Guillaume here has been in the group for... Since what, 20?
I'm pretty sure October 2020.
So October 2020.
Maybe even September, because I joined a bit earlier before the immersion. So almost 3 years, yeah, 2.5.
We just finished the Austin immersion. He was my assistant coach. And he earned that duty because he's a beast. And you've gotten to that beast level at a very fast rate. Obviously you didn't start, you know, with the group. You had done some things before that, but your story is really inspiring. Your game is incredible. It's basically every night there's a new girl here. I'm not exaggerating. I think ever the last, you know, 5 nights, just revolving door of new, young, beautiful women that love Guillaume. So it wasn't always like that for him, and that's kind of why we decided to do this little interview or ask me anything. Some of the guys in the group will be asking questions towards the end, so
yes,
have your questions ready. But yeah, why don't you kind of take us back to pre... cool, pre good with women, Guillaume.
Pre everything, yeah. So, for me, I want to start because I was thinking about what I should write in the Discord. So, for me, it started in high school. The first love ever gotten when I got from girls was when they wanted my math homework solutions. So, then that was when they were like super, super nice to me. And then only till I gave it to them, and it was like, oh, thanks, bye. But going back to the other guys, also, back then I would have been happy with like a 4 or just like any girl. For me, it was just, there were a few girls kind of who wanted to talk to me, but they were so, I don't want to say ugly, but they were so ugly that I would have felt like painful if I would tell my other friends, oh, this is my girlfriend. I would feel like such a shame that I was rather alone than with that girl. Mm. So 0 girls in high school. And then it took me, I think, 1 year in university. I met Daniel, who's also in the group. I met him way before we both became members of the group. He was studying at the same university. And through a lucky coincidence, through a mutual friend of Daniel, I found out that Daniel was in this local approaching group where they were just approaching girls. And I felt like, well, I'm at zero, so I might as well join. And then that was, I think, 2016. Something like 2016 till 2018, I was just kind of like learning a little bit about approaches, doing that, trying to overcome my anxiety. I was not really with a strategy. It was more like...
So it was basically like a bunch of guys at a similar level pushing each other?
Yeah.
Was there any one guy who was like head and shoulders better that we were coaching?
Yeah. There were two guys which were much more experienced who were coaching. They also had for a brief time a company called like Gentleman's Codex. It was kind of funny. No, so they were having like just like some talks.
Okay.
And yeah, but I think the core part was more, it was like a group of guys who could talk about stuff, you could approach together. Guys were pushing each other, so you would have these like going out sessions where guys would send each other to do approaches, basically.
Because right.
I felt, even now, but especially at that time where I had a lot of anxiety and it was so new, I felt like doing it alone to me felt 100 times harder
right
than doing it with Daniel, for example. Like, it could have been anybody, but Daniel and I essentially became friends because we were just like walking around the city talking and then occasionally approaching girls if we saw one.
How often were you approaching?
That's interesting. It varied, but I would say at least twice a week. It was usually the weekends. We had a bit of time, and Saturday was always a very good day because people would come in the city just for shopping. There's a huge pedestrian zone where I was studying.
So twice a week you'd go out there, and how many approaches would you typically do in a session?
So I would say somewhere around 3 to 10. We were going out, like, so the Saturday was longer, but sometimes we would literally walk around 2 to 3 hours. The city where I was in was a bit smaller, so, you know, sometimes you had to walk just to see girls.
So but if you had to do the math, it sounds like, call it, we'll say 7 per day, 15 per week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe only for 40 weeks, so that would be 600 a year.
Okay.
If my math is correct.
For a couple years?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I started in 2016, right? Yeah, I did that at least till like December of 2017, where I will come later to where I had my first sort of kind of like boot camp when I was in the UK. But yeah, for 2 years it was just that. And then
what did you see about your results after doing all those approaches for 2 years?
So I saw a lot of my approach anxiety vanish.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then there was a girl who was like super flattered that I approached her. It was something which never really happened to her before. Maybe it was, but it was just something so out of the box cool that I would get a lot of attraction just by that, even though I was still not confident. Probably had many, many fuck ups, many things not optimal, but I would get away with it because of that initial attraction.
Mm.
So I remember, I think the second girl I slept with, it was funny because I think it was 2 years ago where like Daniel and I were just like talking about our friendship and how we started, and I think we went through like who were the first girls, and the second girl then was like, oh wow, she was way cuter than expected, and she was like an exchange student, so I guess it's also less telling if it's, you know, we were like speaking English, and you know, I feel like if somebody's from the same country, you can always very well tell in what sort of how good they are socially. But if you go to a different country, I think for people it's way harder to kind of like judge you, put you in a box.
Yeah.
Because they don't have that reference experience. So I guess that was one of the factors, but...
Yeah, it's an important, interesting and important point. It's when someone's a foreigner, you don't necessarily pick up on all the subtle
social cues, and therefore, yeah, you have more leeway for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if there's a language barrier, right? Because if you were to speak poor local language, being an actual local, people are just going to think you're really stupid.
Yeah.
But you're clearly not from there, don't know the language as well, you get a huge leeway. Okay, so you're approaching, you're doing that with Daniel. What was kind of like the next big turning point in your game?
Yeah, so, yeah, during these approaches, I would sometimes, you know, hit and have a girl who kind of liked me, but I always never knew why she really liked me. I felt like, okay, I got like really lucky with this one. And I was like, okay, cool. I like rode with it. I learned a little bit more how to sort of like set up dates and how to escalate. I think that was the big next thing I learned. But
and that was just going on a lot of dates and getting more comfortable with escalation?
No, so that was actually very interesting. Back at that time, I think it was 2017, there were a lot of coaches selling online programs, like how to get women.
Mm-hmm.
And one was kind of in particular where many people in that local group kind of vibe with. So we even had like a kind of like Netflix session where we'd all come together and just watch videos. And it was a lot about how you would kind of convert dates, because I'm a very logical guy. I totally didn't know anything. And it was a little bit about how do you escalate? How do you take next steps? Because I think if you start, and especially me, I was such a nice guy, I wouldn't take any risks. Like, I would never know when to kiss a girl. I was always like fearful of rejection. I also didn't understand what women were attracted to. So just watching that, at least for me, was at least a starting point to learn about basic female psychology, about attraction, and about escalation, how you take things forward. Because I think that's very important, because otherwise you just end up in the friend zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a major challenge for many guys who are starting, that they want to become friends, but like you kind of have to risk a few girls hate you in order to have like a few girls love you. So
you have to be polarizing.
Exactly, more polarizing. And also just when you get signals to act on them, to escalate and not to just be like nice back and not do anything. So if a girl, even if it's by luck, gives you signs of attraction, then like to act on them, because the window is closing, and at some point it's closed and you're in the friend zone and she's like, okay, this guy doesn't get it.
Right. Okay. Okay. What happened next?
Yeah. So next, me and my friend, we decided to do a boot camp, which is, I guess, for the guys who don't know, it's like a super, super small scaled, less quality version of an immersion. It was only 2 days, really. It was kind of like 2.5 days, but it was basically only a Friday and a Saturday. And kind of all we did, it was in London, was things to get over our anxiety. So the coach would make us do like ridiculously uncomfortable things so that afterwards we would feel so much better just doing normal approaches, because it's this sort of like, often we judge things in a relative way. So if you do something which makes you super, super uncomfortable, then doing something like approaches which is still uncomfortable just feels much easier, because in comparison to what you did before, it just feels less uncomfortable. So that's what we did during the day. And then during the night, all we did was go to a nightclub in London, and the guy would film us and our interactions with girls. I think it was even without audio, but it was like a really high quality camera. You could see a lot even though it was dark. And then all we did the next day was talk about how we thought that interaction was going, and we had to kind of give a pre-rating, like how do we think, how much this girl liked us, and then we would watch the footage from a third person perspective, and it was super eye-opening to me to actually see the reality and see myself from a third eyes perspective. So
yeah, was it uncomfortable watching yourself? Was it like, did you like the guy that you saw through the camera or no?
Medium. So on the one hand, I saw how awfully wrong my perception of reality was. So I would always say, well, that girl didn't like me that much. And then you would literally see on video all the like clues and hints she got. And that was like massively eye-opening. Mm. On the other,
so she likes you more than you.
Yeah.
Got it.
Some girls just outright didn't, but no, some girls liked me much more than I thought they would.
Right.
And then the other thing was, it was really interesting to see me from a third eye perspective, because from the outside I looked horrible, just because. So for me in particular, I was tall, and what I used to do to talk to smaller girls is literally like bent down. So I was literally like, I guess you couldn't see it, but if I turned from the sun and talked to girl, I would go down like this,
right,
to see her, and I was like a tree almost like falling, and it looked just so
the
horrible.
Tall guy bend over syndrome. Yeah. I've seen that a lot,
and that just looks so horrible from the outside. So just one thing which I learned is literally keeping my body straight up. And what then I would notice is that girls would like go on their tiptoes to talk to me, to be closer to my ear, and that became like a pretty interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where you could just correct one thing in your posture, and it really, nobody ever told me this before, and it really took just somebody to observe me in person and see it. It's like nothing I would have ever figured out in like a write-up or anything.
Right. Yeah, some of those body language mistakes are such killers. And when you're doing things like that, you know, you're disqualified so quickly, and you might not even realize you're doing it until you see yourself on video or someone can point that out. You know, that's the power of coaching and seeing that, because you could have been doing that for years before.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly.
So. Okay. So you take that boot camp, and that was mostly day game, night game?
It was both.
Uh-huh.
It was both, actually. So.
And were you more comfortable in day game or night game? Did you have a preference?
I would say back then I was more comfortable to do day game, because I kind of, even though it was hit and miss approaches, I kind of did that for 2 years. And in day game, I felt more comfortable because I didn't have any competition. In night game, I don't think I still felt like the cool guy. I was always like, ah, there's all these other guys, you mm-hmm. know. I didn't know what to do if any other guy would just even come in and talk to my girl. Just be like, okay, bye. Yeah.
Okay. And then, so what was the next kind of major turning point?
So that was 2018. I think the major turning point at that is that I kind of started to have success with a few girls. I built that inner confidence. I went on a festival with my friend, and what I learned there a lot was to generate attraction in a very short amount of time, and also pushing for kind of like quick escalation, because things are just like crazy on a festival. But I remember,
was that Sziget?
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
It was in Budapest, a really great festival. So literally what you do is you stop girls. It's always like chaos, people running around, so you can.
People running from this stage to that stage, and this, you know, it's just girls running around everywhere. It's nuts.
And they're always like on the way to somewhere, and maybe they're looking for their friend or whatever. So you literally can't be a nice guy and be like, oh, we're going to go on 10 dates. And then if you don't hate me, then by accident, somehow we'll end up. But it was great, and I learned the power of venue changing, which then I learned a lot more through you why that is a good thing. But it's literally stopping, taking goals to different stuff so that it feels like you have so much experience together. Also, you're more in this leading masculine position, which I think is attractive to many girls.
How would you stop the girls in the festival? Do you remember any of the methods you used?
I didn't do the hook and swoop back then, but it was something like, hey, one quick thing before you run off, whatever, and then just like make up something. Or I think I was way less direct back then. I just stopped them, and I felt like girls would stop because I guess I was tall.
Mm-hmm.
My Daniel was also there. He didn't have any problems, and he's like shorter than me, so.
So you're tall. You're 6'5", and that's obviously a big help when it comes to dating. Like, women will choose height over beauty, you know, because women want to feel small in a guy's arms. Guys who are short can also make women feel small, but they have to take up more space, and they have to be more physical, and they have to be a bigger sort of presence. When you're tall and you're big, you know, that's kind of built in, so that can be a big leg up. But you were mentioning to me, you know, prior that you were getting basically nothing out of your height.
Yeah, exactly.
When you were, before your game was any good, right?
Yeah. No, for sure. It sounds so stupid, but it never occurred to me that height was a strength. Like, when I was in my soccer team, I was like, oh, I was nicknamed the Lighthouse. I was like, well, I don't know. I never really felt anything special, and, you know, sometimes bump my head two doors and so on. And I remember even like some of my female friends, like either actual friends or just even girls who would, I don't know, just not want to date me and be like, oh yeah, we can be friends, blah, blah, blah. They would say like, oh, girls like tall guys, I'm sure you'll find somebody. And I always thought in my head, well, I don't really believe the truth in that statement.
Mm.
So it just showed me, cause sort of nothing matters without confidence.
Right.
And you need to build it to just play your best hand. And sometimes you have a little bit better starting position, sometimes not. But some of my friends who are shorter than me, they look way better in the gym. So there's always many things that you can change. It's,
right.
It's not the one thing that like changes everything.
So you're doing the Zigit thing, you're getting more comfortable with, you know, making things happen faster,
yep.
Trying to meet girls in a non-dating sort of environment, getting a lot of approaches, and it sounds like. Was it just around that time where you and I linked up and did that day game session with Daniel, or?
Yeah, I think that was a year later, so.
Okay.
Sort of in that time frame. So I remember on Zigit, I stopped counting, but on average I was making out with something like 8 to 10 girls a day.
Wow.
But I also,
that's impressive.
Yeah, on the festival. So that like how,
because
me a lot.
I mean, it's a you know, if you're listening to this, you're like, oh my God, how is that possible? Well, it's very possible because it's a festival. Girls are going to make
exactly.
out. Basically, you can kind of just like try to make out and they'll
exactly.
make out, you know, like at Carnival, you know, down
exactly.
in Brazil, like making out isn't that big of a deal. Like
exactly.
how many did you actually hook up with? Though?
Exactly. Zero.
Okay. Exactly.
Like I got one in my tent who then ran away and my friend got one. So that was what I was about to say, like making out was way less big of a deal than actually hooking up, but it was really good to learn it and to kind of go for it and to make that experience and to just get more comfortable and easier with kind of escalating,
right.
taking things to next level. And I remember it helped me a lot on the other dates because I would notice like indicators of interest, So like girls flicking their hair or other tells, and then I'd be like, okay, well, maybe I should go for makeout. And often taking risks would really pay off. And even if the girl like dodged the kiss, like you have a great line, like, oh, great kiss dodge.
A plus kiss dodge. I'll try again in 10 minutes. Stay on your game.
Yeah.
So. Just
yeah,
not being like, reactive, not letting it
yeah,
get awkward.
Exactly.
You can
exactly.
say anything, except don't just stand there and be like, ugh.
Exactly. If you make it awkward, then it will be. But so often it was like zero deal. And the girls would respect you way more doing it and dodging a kiss than you not doing it.
Right.
Because at least you're going for it.
Okay, so then what made you want to, well, so for backstory, so Daniel, who was your wingman, he joined the group back in like 2017. He was like a broke college student. So I feel like he was in the group for maybe, you know, 4 or 5 months. And then he was like, you know, it's expensive and I can't afford it. But yeah. maybe when you come to Europe, we can do some one-on-one, you know, day game work. I remember him asking. So I was in Europe and I get a call from Daniel. He's like, hey, I'm with two of my wingmen. One is Guillaume and the other is, I forget the other guy, but you know, they wanted to do a day game session. I mic'd them up, you know, got them on camera and then gave them feedback. And when I showed up, you know, Daniel was, he was so awkward with his, you know, his, like the way he was stopping girls, and most of them weren't stopping. He was, you know, he's very nervous, very awkward. I remember you weren't as nervous, but you were like severely balding and
yeah.
you looked like your fashion was whack. And it was actually the other guy who I felt like was all around probably, you know,
yeah,
getting the slightly better results. But you guys were all like, you know, everyone, I think we spent maybe like only 15 minutes each, like getting footage, because there was just so many girls to talk to.
Yeah.
Right. We maybe got 7 or 8 videos of each guy. It didn't take very long because it was just like one after the other.
Exactly.
And then we went back up and we watched the videos. So what was your, what do you feel like kind of change from that experience? That was our first meeting. Anything you want to highlight about that?
Yeah, so before that, I felt like I was okay stopping girls, but that one meeting, it was also very short. It was, I think, only 3 or 4 hours, and it was literally because we could split the cost by 3 guys.
Right.
We were so broke, that's why we did it. But it was amazing because you showed us our approaches and then how to do the hook and swoop properly. I remember that. And I remember that we were there staying 1 week.
And in case people listening don't know what the hook and swoop is, the hook and swoop is a technique to stop a girl who's walking down the sidewalk, right? And it's just
yes.
this idea where you kind of like run and swoop around her and get her to stop. And it's the least sort of intrusive and comfortable way, but still powerful enough where they will stop and they will acknowledge what you're saying. Because I think the most painful thing that can happen on a day game approach or any approach in general is the girl just completely like ignoring you, giving you that cold shoulder. You know, it's because like you've dealt with the anxiety enough to do it, but then she like literally doesn't like acknowledge your existence as a human being. You feel like you're this small, you know, so.
No, for sure. I've seen a lot of techniques and I felt that this was really just the best practice. Also, I still remember, I think yesterday I went out and one I tried to just do from the front because mm-hmm. I was in a moment and she was like, no, I'm busy on the phone. Literally went past straight through me and I was like, why did I even try to stop her from the front? I was like, stop, Knox. I was like, ah, I can do it, bam. And then it like blew up in my face.
Yep.
So no, that was super helpful, super helpful. And I remember because we were there a few days more, my stopping ratio went from, I don't know, something like 50, 60% to like 95 or something. It was that was the biggest improvement from that one day game session, and I think it paid its dues like the 2 years after it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was super helpful. And then also I remember you gave us a list of bars and nightclubs in that city, which were really good. And I think that was very helpful. And I think it's also very powerful thing in the Discord. For example, now in Austin, right? I don't know anything about Austin, which are the good places, clubs, but we have like our friend Amir here who lives here, who knows which the good places are. And then you can just ask him like, hey, which bars are the best? Which websites should I look events up to? Is there like an Instagram page?
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, especially if you like traveling, and I want to encourage many of the guys traveling because it kind of like gets you out of your normal environment and you can do something else. And maybe even you're more comfortable to try riskier things in a different place because, you know, okay, you will, I don't know, not be judged or not run into the same girl like 2 months later or
mm-hmm.
2 weeks later or something. And just as a side note, that was what you did back then there, but what I think also is really helpful being in the group.
Yeah, being able to just get that information, run with it versus having to, you know,
having to
figure it out yourself over a long period of time.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was how many months before you came to the immersion?
I'm pretty sure that was at least 8 months before. It was 8 to 12 months. Because I remember we did that one session.
Yeah.
Which was super helpful. Then we all went back home. And then I remember when I had my internship that Daniel went to the immersion. And I didn't even...
Oh, yeah, that's right. I did two. And exactly. Daniel went to the first one, right?
Daniel went to the first one. So, I mean, I think...
We gave him the nickname the Terminator of approaching. Well, which is like the Bodinator.
Yeah, the Bodinator.
One of the guys, Nick, from Minnesota or Montana, he was like blown away. And this guy, Nick, he's like a built, like, he's like a sheriff now, actually. And he was like so impressed by Daniel because he's like, this guy just approaches every single girl he sees. He's like the Terminator. And he actually, Daniel, the first day we were out approaching, he took a girl, like, straight from the street back to my flat where I was having everyone staying. I had an Airbnb business in that city. And during the next, like, section of the course, he was hooking up with her in the room. And like, the walls are paper thin. And, you know, she... it was pretty good. I was impressed. She was actually... It was, like, one of those perfect timing sort of thing. And that's the benefit of, you know, doing a lot of day game is sometimes you'll just, you know, the stars will align and you'll get a perfect situation. This girl was like not from there, and she was there just to like have, I think, a surgery done. Yeah. Like the following day.
A nose job the following day.
A nose job the following day, and she had nothing to do, knew nobody in the city. She was just kind of like walking around, being a tourist, and then here comes Daniel and, well, you got nothing to do. Let's go here. He basically ran the dating protocol, right?
Yeah.
Did a couple different venues and then brought her back. And so that was impressive. But I digress.
No, it's really great that you say that because, so I don't think even I knew exactly that Daniel was going to an immersion. I knew that he was in the group and sometimes he would tell me these gold nuggets.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of sharing advice that you gave in the group. And I was like, damn, this is like really good. I remember sometimes like, oh, this is like such an emotional concept, which for me, I felt hard to grasp, but so well explained logically and the reasoning behind it. So I remember that we were talking sometimes about like advice that you gave in the group, but then we were in different cities in that time because I had my internship. And during that, I think it was a summer. He did the immersion and I just like kept getting voice messages from him and pictures from girls. You know, it was really like, I felt like I was missing out.
Yeah, you're like, FOMOing.
Exactly. And I think at that time I was pretty comfortable approaching and generating new girls that were sixes, maybe a seven every now and then. I was comfortable was kind of like doing the steps. I roughly had a plan, but I felt like my really biggest wall was getting hotter girls.
Right.
And that was kind of always my dream goal, to get hotter girls or like one really hot girlfriend. And
so you felt like you'd kind of hit a plateau where
exactly
you were able to attract a lot of women, but you were consistently failing with the, what do you want to call them, eights and up, or
exactly
the ones who you, you know, were really intimidated by.
Yeah.
And do you think it was simply because you were intimidated and they could smell that fear? Do you think it was more like an inner game issue, or just the fact that you hadn't had success with enough of them yet to really believe that you were worthy?
Yes. Yeah? It was totally that. I think, so the biggest thing, I think it was a confidence issue. Obviously, I would also feel more nervous, or I just kind of be more chasey over text. Like, fuck, I really want to do something with this girl. And then I kind of knew I was doing some things wrong, but I was like, well, I still really want to talk to her. So kind of knowing it's bad, but still doing it, it's like smoking, you know it's bad, but you kind of like still do it, sort of this sort of thing. I was for sure nervous on the dates, but I think the biggest thing was I did believe I could get with them, because I had so far like zero success, or like one, and I was like, well, that was super lucky. And there was one thing. Oh yeah, I just didn't believe I was good enough for them, because I was coming from this logical thing. I was like, well, I view myself as, at that time, I still had hair, I was balding, I was always trying to sort of hide it, never find any good way to do that. I just felt like I was maybe a 7, and I felt like at best, and I felt like, well, the 8s and up were just out of my league, and I just didn't feel worthy.
So you felt like a 7 from a how I look scale, or a 7 as the overall package scale?
I think 7 from a look scale.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you felt like, because I'm a 7, I don't deserve an 8.
Exactly.
You know, it's funny, I felt like that too, because I think as guys, we make the assumption that women are attracted to the same things we're attracted to. We're attracted to the physical, first and foremost,
yeah,
right? So
yeah,
it's like, if she's a 9, right,
yeah,
then it's like, oh, she's not going to want me unless she thinks I'm a 9 physically. But it's totally not the case, because women are much more attracted to the whole package, or attracted to the man, not just how he looks, but how he carries himself, his body language, his confidence, how he speaks, his tonality, the way he moves through a room, and then even more importantly, status, which is, do other girls pre-select him and want to be with him? And even if he's really ugly and short and bad looking, if the other, you know, 8s and 9s in the room are good enough,
yeah,
if he's good enough for them, then guess what? They're like, ooh,
who's that guy?
Who's that guy? Like, he must be, you know, something else to be pulling these sorts of girls. And it's like, that status is what unlocks, you know, the all of those opportunities for guys. But until we realize that, we're just like, oh, I'm just not good looking enough. Or maybe, like, I have one client who's, you know, he's not really in the group. He's just a guy I work with one-on-one. He's very wealthy and, you know, professional poker player, but his mindset is totally screwed up. He wants to actually get the surgery where they lengthen your legs.
Oh, I heard about that. Oh my God. Yeah.
And he's not that short. He's like 5'8", 5'9". And he's like, well, if I had 2 or 3 more inches, I'm like, dude, first of all, you can buy the shoes that have the insoles.
Yeah.
He's like, well, I want to do that. And the other thing, I'm like, you're breaking your legs. Like, there could be serious, complications from that. You might never walk again. But he's so fixated, he just can't understand this concept of status and pre-selection.
Yeah.
Even though I've taken him on trips before where it worked.
like he has everything to have the status, right?
Yeah, he's already a celebrity.
Exactly. Like, how much more can you do?
He's he's a little on, I think, on the autism spectrum. So some of these concepts, you know, he's quirky. Some of these concepts are very difficult. And Yeah, and that's a challenge, and I'm, you know, trying to really drive that point home. But you know, some of us take longer to to realize than others, I guess you could say.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so Dan goes to the immersion. You're FOMOing.
Yeah.
9 months later, you come back and
yeah.
do the next immersion, which was. So why did you want to go to that? What was like? Oh, it was because to get the hotter girls, right?
Yeah, it was mainly to get hotter girls.
Yeah.
And I saw that transition in Daniel. So. On the immersion, but also
and you weren't later. You joined the group like when you came into the immersion. I remember.
Yeah, I joined.
Or a couple, 2 months before, I think.
Yeah, something like that. It was exactly because I think you were trying to set up the immersion, and you know we were like confirming it before. So once we confirmed it, I joined. But there was some time before that. Yeah, and my main motivation was because I felt like. Dan and I was sort of like equal. He was for sure better looking and like getting also, I thought at that time, just naturally like better girls from that. But also the immersion and later I saw him improve a lot and understand things a lot better. And I just felt like, well, if it worked for him, then it could also work for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that for me, there was... It was a lucky coincidence that he did it before me, but that's how it was. And then I decided, yeah, I should do the immersion.
Well, that was a pretty special immersion because we had five. That's the most advanced group I've ever had. It was you, Dan, Nick, Adam, and
Jacob.
And all of you guys... were pretty much like doing very well when it came to generating attraction, right? Basically what we did most of the time was just a lot of day game. And then I wanted to really kind of shock you guys with bringing hot girls around in a sexual environment. I think the night you showed up in the beginning, I had Igor come in and have the he brought two girls, and we did a whipping and spanking and live squirting demonstration. you know that was possible back in my old place of living, which was fun. But I remember you said you had a pretty insightful aha moment from that.
Yeah, so the two girls, they were shockingly hot, blonde, dressed up in these tight leather pants. And then I remember there was this one girl, we kind of like locked eyes and we're just smiling. And then the other guys, I felt like didn't really spank her that hard or I don't know, like... I just tried to do the exact same thing that Igor was doing, and I felt like nobody else was really actually paying attention to the details. So I was whipping her so good that she was like, oh, you're lying, you did this before, blah, blah, blah. It generated like a shit ton of attraction. I could feel she would like me, but I was just so... I just felt like she was so hot that she was like three... times out of my league that we went to the club together and nobody was kind of talking to her, and I just felt even too afraid to talk to her because I was like, fuck, I'll fuck this up, then I'll feel bad. And then you told me the next day, well, like, she liked you and one totally could have fucked this girl. They're like single, she was like having a great time. Then I felt so bad. I still remember it to this day. It was like so bad, so painful emotionally that I didn't forget it. And I was like, fuck, so next time I really will just go for it and take that risk. And I think just this one huge fail where I was there and then you pointed it out, I was just like, I missed this huge opportunity. And it felt so painful that then afterwards I was really motivated to go for it because I was like, damn, I don't want to miss this opportunity again.
Right. Yeah, it's often those moments of, you know, narrow misses, or slipped through my fingertips. Those were the ones that hurt the most, but also provide, I think, the biggest learning, because it's like, it's so painful that you're like, I am not going to let that happen again, right? And that's the inspiring sort of, or that's the thing that creates the inspiration for massive action following. Was there anything else that, obviously, you know, that was, I think that was a shorter version of that we typically do. That was just like a Thursday through Sunday.
Exactly, yeah.
Was there anything else that you got out of that experience that, like, were you able to make that? Well, I know you kind of stayed in town with the other guys and basically, like, you know, went crazy for the next couple weeks. But, like, just from the actual event, was there anything else that really stuck out?
Yes, there were two really big things. So one were, I learned a lot about the social circle, which was completely new to me, or somehow I kind of like would feel like I read it somewhere, but then couldn't really create and believe this image in my head. But it was, I think, something what I had to experience actually in person and to see to really believe in it. So I think that was really amazing that you got all these girls, and obviously, like, I knew none of them, but then I could see how the dynamics change when you stack an environment in your favor. And I think also going just a glimpse of the future, I think that experience gave me a lot of confidence to host these events and parties, because I always would feel, I think, a little bit shied out. And I was like, oh, what if I invite three girls and they know that I kind of try to talk to all of them? What if I'm getting found out?
What if they all know you're hitting on them, right?
Exactly. So that was one huge thing. And then the other thing,
and not caring, realizing, like,
exactly,
who cares, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. No, I was super afraid of that. So that's why I never really did it. I always wanted to have my safe one-on-one dates,
right,
trying to hide from girls that I was also talking to other girls, maybe even lie about that, and, you know, which is bad. And then so that was the one thing, to see the dynamics change, and it was such a big change, I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just from one-on-one attraction wise the other thing was, which I think was one of a kind, playing these games like Sexy Jenga. So the Jenga games with the wooden blocks, and then you write things on the stones, which kind of help you get things forward, you know?
I can explain that a little bit better.
Exactly.
So, I found over my, you know, journey through this stuff that there were some fun games you could play in a group environment that would encourage people to, like, push their boundaries and have a good time. And, you know, everyone in a social situation, like, if they're a little drunk and they're having fun, like, they want to do something memorable, they want to do something, like, a little bit crazy. So I actually remember I was traveling in Germany, in Dusseldorf, and my wingman was being a loser. He didn't want to go out that night, so I went out alone and started talking to one girl at the bar, and turns out she was with four other girls and four other guys, so a group of nine, and they needed one more guy to play this game, and I was that number 10, right? So they had a bottle of whiskey in the middle of, like, a circular table that we're all standing around. And then one girl next, and we lined up girl, guy, girl, guy, girl, guy around. And then the girl is just like, okay, don't drop the ice. And she just, you know, puts a cube of ice in her mouth and she passes it to me.
Okay.
You know, so we, like, kiss to exchange the ice, and then I kiss the girl to my left. And then the ice keeps going around. And when the ice either melts or someone drops it, you have to take a shot.
Oh,
and
nice.
I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. I just made out with two girls. And then we like rotate, right? So by the end of the game, you've made out with every girl there. And the way that they pass the ice is very obvious if they like you or not, right?
Yeah.
If they're just like like really fast, like trying to pass it, so there's like no like actual kiss happening, versus, you know, they'll pass it really slow and they'll get a lot of tongue in there, or they'll like intentionally like let it like, you know, bite it, chew it a little bit so it like dissolves in your mouth. And I'm like, this is fucking genius. Like, I need to be playing this game all the time. So I started, you know, always trying to build that ice game into my sort of parties and my repertoire. And then I was like, all right, well, what else can we do that's like a fun sort of social thing, where that allows people, it, you know, it, it gives them the option to like push themselves, but it's, you're not forcing anyone. You can opt out of the game. If you don't like the game, you don't have to play, right? So we made this Jenga, sexy Jenga, I guess you can call it. Like you said, you write things on the blocks. You write like, kiss the person to the left, kiss the person to the right, exchange shirts with someone like a different gender, right? Give a spanking, get a spanking, give a lap dance, right? So you don't know which block you're gonna pull, but you pull that block and you gotta do something. And then we created like an X-rated Jenga where we put a little black dot on the really bad, you know, Jenga blocks. You pull one of those out and it's like, you know.
I can give a fun one. One was lick a girl's pussy, and that's, I remember what I had to do. I think it was the immersion or the week after we had a party, and yeah, I mean, sure enough, it worked.
Well, the game escalates. Like, exactly, in the beginning, exactly. It's like, oh, a little kiss here, a little kiss there, you know, then people are making out, and then it's like lap dance, and it's like naked lap dance, and then it's like lick a girl's pussy, and the game is escalating. It's like, okay, this is what we're doing. This is like the new normal.
Exactly.
And then to take it even a step further, I developed this other game called Spin the Bottle, Truth or Dare. So obviously everyone knows Spin the Bottle. You spin the bottle, you kiss the person it lands on, right? But Spin the Bottle, Truth or Dare is you spin the bottle and whoever it lands on decides truth or dare. And then the group as a whole gets to come up with that truth or dare. And I had played this game so many times that whenever I play, people are just like, Robbie, you choose all the truths and all the dares.
Exactly.
Because I'm able to like use my social awareness to be like, all right, clearly they like each other, so I'm gonna involve her in a dare with this guy and maybe this other girl. Like one example, I'll be like, all right, you're gonna close your eyes and three people are gonna come and kiss you. And then you keep your eyes closed, and then you have to say who was who, right? And so I'll be like, you know, Guillaume, you go second, this girl goes first, and that girl, you know, goes next order, right? So then all three people do it, and then they guess. And then you can obviously, you know, have that escalate. It's like somebody, you know, feel this person's boob or do this. Like when you get people involved, people love it. It's just like so much fun, right? It's juvenile, but it's fun, it's sexy. And if you're able to quarterback a game like that, you can literally like get people, you can kind of be like this sex cupid role. Like people would love to come to my parties because everyone would get laid, right? Like the girls would love it, the guys would love it, because it's like if they can just show up and Robbie's gonna basically, you know, be the puppet master and be like, I know I like this guy, or it's very obvious when you're playing the games who likes who. And you can, you know, got my cousin laid during that game in Berlin when we did this. Yeah. You know, and nothing would have happened with the girl had I not, and Maria, my wife, helped to orchestrate that. So you experienced, we played a lot of Spin the Bottle, Truth or Dare, yes, Jenga that week, right?
Yeah, it was, the biggest surprise was, I think I would have, like, if you explained it to me on a Zoom call, or like, hey, you have to do this, I would not do it. I would feel uncomfortable. I would not believe that it would work.
Right.
And then because I would have probably a lack of social awareness, creativity, and just maybe this a little bit like, I don't know if this is gonna work. Girls would pick up on that and I would have totally fucked it up. So just, I think being there, seeing you orchestrate it and seeing how much the girls loved it, how much it was totally fine and normal for them, and you know,
yeah,
they even like love it. I was so astonishing to me how much girls are into that. And then once I saw that, I was like, okay, I actually saw this works. I had this belief that it worked. And then when I stayed longer with a few of the guys after the immersion, then we pulled it off very successfully because of that.
Right. And I've never been able to like explain this to some guy and have him successfully pull it off without seeing it first.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, maybe they just, it's usually just because they don't try, because they feel like they can't do it, or you know, there's anxiety there. I don't know, but I'm guessing almost zero have tried because they're like, eh, it seems weird, it seems awkward. I don't know, I don't get it, right? So maybe I'm not explaining it as properly as I could. I feel like I did a pretty good job right now. So maybe someone who's watching this at some point will be like, Robbie, I tried that and it worked,
Yes.
and I didn't need to see it. So hopefully that's the case. But yeah,
Yeah.
you're hearing it from the horse's mouth. Like, it
Yeah,
fucking works. It's fun. And the
for
girls like it more than the guys. That's the crazy thing.
sure, for
They
sure.
like my wife loves to like be the one playing the game. And when she's the one like telling people what to do, and she's the one telling girls what to do, like it just gets way out of hand really
Yeah.
quickly.
I remember in Berlin, Maria was like to a girl like, you take off your pants. And that girl took off her pants, was wearing underwear. So
We have one girl like flash the street and then like run down to the street and like do something crazy and shoot. Yeah, anyways.
for another day, guys.
Yeah, so all right, so getting back to the story, that next week, or was it 2 weeks, you and the guys stuck around
Yeah.
and just, you know, rented a spot on Airbnb and
Yeah.
just tried to throw parties and
Exactly.
approach girls, and you expressed to me that that was like a huge, like, you know, learning
Yes,
curve.
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were. I mean, you build so much momentum and flow in the immersion, I felt like, and the other guys felt like it would have been like a waste to just like go back to a normal environment or whatever to like cut off that momentum. So we both stayed 2 weeks longer and we really acted on everything you said. And we had a 3-bedroom apartment. So each of us had his own room, and then we had one small kind of living room area, which was perfect for sort of the party setup. I remember like some of the girls there were really into like hookah, shisha. I guess it's like different in every city, but that was a thing. So we always like had one there because we knew the girls would love it. I personally hate smoking. I never smoke. So it was not for me. It was just for the girls, for the environment. And we had the sexy Jenga there, the truth is there. And all we did was every guy tried to bring at least two girls. Or like two girls was usually kind of what we were going for, two girls to actually show up. So we had a 2-to-1 ratio, at the very minimum one girl, which was still kind of fine. And then we were literally just trying to do all the things we learned about the week prior with you.
And after that, is that when you kind of feel like you hit like your stride? Like, 'cause I mean, from what I remember, yeah, you got really good by the end of that time. And you've continued to improve. It's not like you're putting as much focus time into it, I think, as of late, 'cause you know, you're in a pretty decent school doing a lot of studying and
Yeah.
you know, but I'm impressed after seeing you here this week. You know, certainly you haven't digressed at all. I think you've definitely gotten better. You've gotten more confident. You really own like your physicality, your size, your body language. Like, you do a really good job of making girls feel comfortable, but also like using your physicality to create attraction, and that's always cool to watch. So what change, I guess, after that experience and up until now?
So once I did it with you, it was in a different city. I always had this mental block that like the place where I live, where I had my apartment, I had all my setup, technically, like I could have so much more because like I just have my apartment, my setup, right? When we went to the immersion, it was a different city for me. So some of the things I have at my home, like a really good sound system or something, or like lights what I could purchase, like we didn't really have, but in my head it was like, oh, in my city I can't do it. It's like the girls are like this or that, or I just can't do it because of XYZ. But then I did the immersion with you, in a different city, and then I also like traveling, so whenever I had like 2 weeks off, I would like travel with some of the guys in the group. Since I made more friends, I got to know more people. It wasn't just Dan and me, it was always other guys involved, though we like got to know each other guys. So the biggest thing is, once I did it like in, I felt like at least two separate locations. Like I think it was necessary to do it in two, but for me, I just felt like that was what it took. So I had the confidence to be like, okay, I can do this anywhere. It's not like bound to one spot or one environment. So then I think the biggest change was when I got home, that I could successfully incorporate everything what I learned. I think I went less crazy on the party and house party thing, because just for me, I do zero online dating games, zero. So it was just involving more time, I guess, on a regular basis. So I had...
I love that you do zero online dating. It doesn't mean you do zero Instagram. And that's an important point.
Instagram, I try to do a lot. But I do zero of these, like, Bumble, Tinder, mm-hmm. the traditional dating apps.
I just found the quality sucks, right?
Exactly, like, what's the point? Exactly. Yeah. I found I date at least two. So on a beauty scale, 1 to 10, at least two numbers down than I would do in day game. At least. So then I was like, well, it's just not time efficient for me. I'd rather work Monday, Friday, not worry about all this stuff and girls being flaky. I have a friend, you met him this week. He's way better looking and ripped. And I see him having to deal with all these flaky girls. And then I'm like, at day game, I have zero competition. Like, it's very obvious to me when a girl texts back, it's usually... I can tell, but it's also, you have a much higher response rate. And if a girl's like, hey, let's do it, I have like a really low flake rate.
Right.
And I felt that even with guys who are much better looking and online game, I feel like it's all about looks and really high quality pictures, maybe even more about the picture quality or having a great set of pictures together. But definitely, I would say looks, for obvious reasons, is a bigger factor than personality, because you just can't really talk.
Right.
And I just felt I'd rather have my non-flaky, better, hotter girls for day game.
Well, so this guy we're speaking about, your buddy, yesterday he was, his flight was delayed. So instead of leaving at 6 p.m., it got bumped back to like 6 a.m. the following day. And he's on his phone, sitting in the living room, like, you know, triple texting this one girl who he went out with the night before, trying to get her on a date so he can, you know, smash before he leaves. And we went out to get coffee. He met a girl, you know, I pushed him to approach a girl in the coffee shop. He got her number. She was cute. So I'm like, dude, why don't you just go out with her? And in the meantime, while you're waiting for her, like, do more day game. Like, why are you sitting here on your phone texting girls on Bumble when there's beautiful women walking around in real life? Like, get off of your device.
Exactly.
And he did. And what happened?
So, yeah, he, I think he joined us approaching, because we were trying to get him out. So he joined us approaching, and he approached one girl, which was actually really, really nice. She had great walk, nice body language, very sweet. He approached her, and it was a Monday. So it was not even like Saturday or whatever. It was a Monday afternoon. And he approached her, and I think she was going somewhere, but fair enough, they exchanged Instagram, and then they scheduled for later that evening. He even told her, like, hey, I'm leaving in the morning, but I want to see you. And she was like, well, he's leaving, but still I want to meet him. So they met up at 10:30, and they went to...
Usually we say never say you don't live there. Say, exactly. Oh, I might move here, that sort of thing. Because a lot of girls are like, oh, this guy's leaving tomorrow, he's just trying to get it in. So, like, that's the point. But so, if you're actually leaving tomorrow and you know for sure, and you're just going for that Hail Mary, then...
I mean, you should do it. Yeah, I mean, he had nothing to lose because he's going tomorrow anyway.
Right.
So better to be confident up front about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she... had something to do, but it was like, hey, I'm free after 10:30. So they met at 10:30 at this really great lounge vibey cocktail place, which another friend of the group who lives here recommended. So he had a great setup there. He had a date, and then I'm pretty sure, I don't know if he had the second venue or not, because he didn't have time to talk about it. He still has to write up the message, but
he ended up going back to her place.
Exactly. He ended up going back to her place and then fucked her and then stayed there even till 4 a.m. And it seemed like they're
really went straight to the airport. Yeah.
He almost missed his flight because he wanted to stay longer. But yeah, and I literally told him, like, hey, please write up the story in the Discord and then tell me how much better was that than you're trying to do Bumble game.
Right. Last day leaving Bumble game. It's like, yeah, guys get so, you know, just kind of like in the these bad habits of just like, you know, going on Bumble, swiping for way too much time every day. Because, you know, these apps are designed to hijack your brain. They're the same way that a slot machine works in Vegas. Like, keeps you there. You just keep swiping because it's addicting, you know? Yeah. The machines know. So in terms of, like, your overall growth, there's anything else that you wanted to highlight? And I guess, like, what do you want to work on going forward from here? What's the next step for you?
That's a great question. Can you keep that question in mind? Because so many. Yeah, so we were at the immersion year after, right? I could incorporate many of the things in my normal life. I honestly think my next really unlock was the Berlin immersion. I wasn't a participant, right? I was an assistant coach, so I felt that I could teach a lot of the guys kind of the basic things that I felt really, really helpful, and also I could share some insights from the immersion before which I had with you, and I felt like some of the guys found that really helpful, so that made me proud. But even myself on that immersion, I felt I learned a lot about the drug game, which was very new to me. But I realized that some of the party girls, like, I never did to that point, never did any drugs in my entire life. But
I guess if you're in Berlin, I mean,
exactly, in Berlin, it's like super. I didn't even smoke marijuana just because I hate smoking. I can't smoke, so I didn't even do that. But exactly, we were in Berlin, and I just felt like
seems like more people do, like, less people drink alcohol versus doing MDMA or whatever, party drugs.
Yeah.
Which I think alcohol is the worst drug on the planet. They've actually done studies to show that that's the case. In the US, right, it's just booze, 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 and that's normal. But Berlin's a little different scene.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I also think alcohol is one of the very few drugs which make you aggressive, which you drink too much. So, yeah, even in Germany, which you would... because we were in Berlin, even in Germany there were these discussions about legalizing now this stuff and a lot more open. I think from the outside it's kind of like viewed as a more like strict country or whatever people work, but even there it's getting more loosely. Anyways, what I found out is that a lot of the hot girls who also like to party, they just naturally get exposed to these things. And I just felt sometimes I couldn't share anything. Or when girls would talk about drugs or maybe even taking one, I felt like I was like, okay, I'm like really out of the place. I don't know anything about it. So that was really helpful for me to learn about that. And for me personally, I think, so I took once MDMA on that Berlin immersion, and I just felt it helped me very much with vulnerability and things that I tried to hide from girls of my past.
Yeah.
And I just felt...
And this is... MDMA is a drug designed specifically by therapists, psychologists, to help people access, you know, those emotions. and you know, it gets a really bad rap, I think, in the media, yeah. Right? Versus club party drug, you're gonna, like, no one's ever died from taking MDMA, as far as I know. Maybe one person for who knows what, but like, you compare it to alcohol, it's a silly comparison. But you know, that was also my experience when I tried those substances for the, you know, back in the day, for like, it was very much a way for me to kind of connect with my emotions and become more vulnerable and express myself in a different way, and had a lot of fun. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, I read obviously about it, and it's also used in PTSD treatment, so post-traumatic stress disorder, if you're like a soldier who saw so many, you know, maybe traumatic events, to help you get over them. And I just felt in the environment really, really comfortable, and I think that was like the main and only reason why I decided to do that the first time. And I just felt I could really open up to girls and connect on a much deeper level. And going forward, I think I've only did it twice in my life so far, so it's, you know, not like, oh, I'm doing it every weekend, whatever. No, it was just for me to go through this experience to then learn that you can, I can be much more open and vulnerable when the time is right with a girl, and that would lead to a much deeper connection and more trust. Obviously, that is more like when you already know a girl a little bit more, you don't do it at the very beginning.
Right.
You want, at the beginning, you want to have attraction, but then it's also very attractive to girls, or at least I made the experience that it forms a connection if you can then also open up about other things later.
Yeah. Yeah, and have that experience together. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, so that was the main thing, and then what I did again, I stayed longer with a few of the other guys in Berlin, and we again tried to do the social circle, and I think it was 3 weeks, and I've never been in Berlin before in my entire life, so I knew zero people there. And then me and another friend, we brought 10 girls each to a party, and we had a huge party, and I saw how girls were like really going out of their way to talk to guys, because obviously we had way more girls. I remember there were like two girls hitting on you like crazy. Like, oh my God, I love the dogs and everything. And then the whole next summer after that, I still got messages from girl like, hey, when are you back in Berlin? Because it was like so good that they were like, they saw it once and they felt like, holy fuck, nobody else ever did this like great of a party. So it's A, just making the girls have fun, but then obviously also they enjoy, you know, being with cool guys, competing for them. It also feels much more an achievement for them, I think.
Yeah, so I guess to kind of like hit the major points along the way for you, it seems like, you know, you found some local guys, you started approaching, got over your anxiety, you got some coaching to kind of pinpoint some of the things you were doing wrong, both
body language correction,
day game, night game.
Yeah.
You went back to the drawing board, more approaching, you know, came to do those events with me where you saw the power of social circle, you saw the power of working with other wingmen to create an environment where you've got, you know, a ratio in your favor, and having those fun games, and, you know, learning how to push yourself sexually, like you talked about at the going to that Zeget festival. And then, you know, learning a little bit about drug culture, and not really drug culture, but just partying in general, like what beautiful women are
exposed to.
And then, yeah, not wasting your time with online dating, using Instagram to showcase your lifestyle, posting consistent stories, you know, so girls are like, when are you coming back? Or I want to come to this thing, that this cool thing you're doing, or, you know, they stay top of mind and remember who you are and reach out to you. Yeah. And then doing it for yourself, helping other guys, you know, as a coach. And, it's been a really cool sort of experience for me watching you, because you've been so like, I'm like, very much validation for me that what I'm teaching works. It's awesome because I'm like, well, if Johannes can pull it off, right, it must work. Because when you came to me, I was like, oh my God, this guy. Just dorky, bald, poorly dressed, like, you know, and now you're just a total, like, machine beast, you know, so it's been a very cool journey to watch, and I appreciate you allowing me to, like, you know, be your mentor and coach and, you know, along the way, so that means a lot.
No, yeah, same. I felt really thankful that my other friend somewhere found you out, because I think you were really hard to find back in the day, so.
Yes, I'm trying to become more easy to find by, you know, making this sort of content, but yeah, definitely was, still am a little bit hard to find, unfortunately. So let's open it up. We've got a few guys on the call.
I think the last question you asked was what my
what's your next
for
step?
The future.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought about that a lot, and I think I kind of came down to three things. So one, which I learned at this immersion, so I'm really thankful that you invited me, because even though, you know, I'm helping, I also learn a lot. So one thing what I want to do is use Instagram much more, because I felt I've been decent, but, you know, there's a lot to optimize, and I felt that we discussed this a lot. You're probably going to make more content about that. I have a feeling we have guys who are really good at that. We convinced, like, one of our friends, Ford, to do it.
Right.
Just because he saw the power of it, to use Instagram much more. And I already tried this the last few days to, you know, always upload 3-4 stories and sometimes film something. And I kept in my head, okay, I'm going to post that later. I'm going to post that tomorrow, where I know I'll work the whole day. It still looks like I'm doing some cool shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing. The other thing, what I also tried this week, hilariously failed, was to do something more like threesomes, because I haven't done too much, but I was also never, I think, that into it, maybe because I was also, I don't know, maybe not comfortable with that a few years back, but right now I think it's just naturally something I just want to do and see how I feel and get it off of my bucket list, or, you know, have like one main girl who's maybe like also bisexual, and then see where that goes.
You were pretty close the other night.
Yeah, exactly.
I got home after walking the dogs, and I, you know, peek around the corner, and Guillaume's out there on the balcony with a girl, and you know, like, there, it looks like they're about to hook up, so I like scamper away, and then I guess you guys did hook up, and yeah. After you're like, well, why don't we go try to find another girl for a threesome, which yeah. You almost successfully pulled off.
Yeah, we almost did it, yeah. she wanted to call her friend, because she was like, well, my friend is down, she wants to fuck me, so. But then her phone completely died, so then we were just on the street trying to find another girl. If, you know, that girl...
Throwing Hail Marys on a Monday night. But yeah, that was, that for me, I remember I had a huge sort of... period of growth when I started being like just owning my lifestyle, my desires, yeah. My sexuality. I found a girlfriend who's very much into other women, and we went threesome hunting 4 or 5 nights a week. We maybe had, I don't know, before we got into like the swinging scene, because we had so many threesomes that eventually we're like, this could be probably a lot easier if we just go to like sex parties and do stuff like that. But like, yeah. It was much different, because all those people that we met at the sex parties, they didn't have those skills to like go out and create threesomes.
Yeah, yeah,
we just got
yeah,
lazy after a while. Yeah, like, let's just meet couples and hook up. But that period of growth was insanely eye-opening for me. And yeah, that's interesting. I feel like you're kind of right on the precipice of that. You're a lot younger. I was doing that stuff when I was like 30, 31. So you're 25, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. But I think that's a good next step for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that would be the main thing. And then the last thing, to kind of host more parties.
Yeah.
Kind of by myself. I felt like...
Or be the one generating not by yourself, like, but be the one in charge, you could say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. right now, always it was somebody else kind of owned the environment in mm-hmm. the group. But I think it will be easier going forward if I have a job and everything. But what I find, kind of looking back, what I find I'm really grateful for, that I could kind of do almost all of this was with basically zero money, like broke student. Yeah. Like right now, also through you, and you have a lot of successful clients, it's like really great to see other people. They can, like, it just gets easier setting up an environment and so on. If you don't have to, like, worry that much about money, but it's really just something which is reinforcing your game. So if your game sucks, you'll just be a bigger sucker. You'll get scanned by girls on, like, girls who just, how do you say, seeking, you know, you get
sugar babies.
The shit out of them. Yeah. Sugar babies, you go to strip clubs, you just lose 1K and got, like, nothing out of it.
Yeah.
And you'll just get horribly scammed. But if you have confidence, if you have game, then it just unlocks and makes a lot of things easier. You can, like, hire people to set up your party stuff, to go shopping. Like, I always found it painful to go buy all the booze, carry the bag. I was so fucking sweaty. I always had to take a shower, and you'd always plan, like, that extra pair of clothes just to go fucking booze shopping. You know, so it's always like waste of time, no fucking car, like nothing. So, but you can do everything with of this without money. So I think looking back, I'm really grateful to do it, because now I'm in my head like, okay, like I don't need money to do it. But obviously going forward, and also seeing a lot of the other guys who successfully coached, it just gets easier, and it reinforces your game and the skills you have. So I think that's kind of the natural last thing,
right,
which I want to do, to just, yeah, do cooler environments, make it more funny.
Well, I remember I got advice from an older guy, and he's like, you should experience life as a man with money and game before getting married, because there's nothing like that experience. I'm like, I think I heard that when I was like 31 or 32, and maybe I was in a relationship. I'm like, okay, I'm out of that. because like when you hear something and you know it's true,
yeah,
like you do yeah. that. And so, you know, I really started making pretty good money at the age of like 33. And from the age of like 33 to 38, you know, I mean, guys who follow the podcast have seen the party trips on yachts and villas and crazy stuff that I did. And it, with money, it just unlocks
exactly.
just an amount of abundance that's stupid. But if you don't have the game, forget it. Like, you will get none of that. And it's just that having the money, like you said, can unlock those, like, you know, mega experiences.
Exactly.
But without the game, you have zero chance, and you're just going to get, you know, totally screwed. So
exactly, that's just hearing those stories, it's like, okay, I really want to have it. It's on my bucket list, so, you know.
I highly recommend it.
No, for sure.
Well, cool. Let's open it up to questions.
I got a question, if no one's going. You talked about your height, and you not recognizing it as an asset until you started doing this, and I relate to that a lot, because same for me. Like, I sort of was like, yeah, people would tell me I was tall, but I was like, I'm not getting results, so it must not be as important as they're making it out to be. And yeah, so here I relate to that, and then seeing you go out this week, going out with you, sort of seeing you take that confidence and be very direct in your approaches, and just sort of have that, like, you know, very almost like bare bones, deep voice, masculine, just sort of approach, like, hey, like, even at night, you know, just like, hey, what's up, this is me, kind of thing. I was wondering, like, how long did it take you to get over that that anxiety, and to be comfortable in that, like, very masculine sort of frame of mind, where, let's say, you go up at night to a bar and you're just like, hey, what's up, kind of thing?
I just got a lot of sort of positive reinforcement from girls. So I remember one night I was going out to a bar with my wingman Dan, and I opened two girls and I literally said, "Hi, I'm Johannes. This is my friend Daniel." And then these girls were like super open and everything. And then they told us the like day later when we had a date and everything that, "Oh, that was so cool how you like approached us." And I was like, "Okay, cool. Well, maybe I'll just do that more often." And then I feel also like girls are really, really good at telling if you have confidence or not in very, very few seconds. So yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I also felt like the hotter girls I got with, especially after the immersion with Robbie, they would just love it so much more when I was, I feel like, a more masculine version. And I feel like I feel like right now in like the media or in general, you know, there's a lot of this like toxic masculinity stuff, and I feel like it's sometimes away from reality where like girls actually like masculine guys. So I just felt like I was owning it more because I felt that girls who were submissive and feminine, which are the girls I'm into, would love it much more. So I was like, well, it's just a natural filter. I could still kind of go up and trying to be the clown, but it also, I think, just is more of a mismatch with just how I look and how I naturally am. So I just made a really good experience to be less gamey and just be like, "Hi, I'm whatever, what's up, this is my name." And then, you know, they will either love you or hate you.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, during, I would say less than 6 months to get over it. It was just, it was just kind of like more owning myself, getting positive reinforcement from girls, but it was just also just being comfortable myself. And it's just like, hey, I remember maybe like 3 years before, I sometimes tried like a technique I heard or say something which wasn't really me, but I was like, well, I'm gonna use this because I think it will work. But then I just realized, no, I can just be myself. I can get away with almost anything. And I made those experiences because over time I just transitioned from doing something because I think it would work to just say or answer something in a way that I think is true. You know what I'm saying? It's just like sometimes, for example, like girls would say something, "Oh, this is such a cool movie, blah, blah, blah." And then I was like, well, this girl's really into this movie. So I'll just be like, "Oh yeah, that's an amazing movie. Do you also know this other one?" And just kind of try to build on this positive thing because I think it would work. Because, you know, it's something we have in common, or I'd be like, okay, cool. But now if it's something which I generally find uncool, then I would just be like, no, that's a horrible movie. Oh my God, how can you watch this?
Being disagreeable,
exactly,
yeah.
Like disagreeable, or just like make fun of her. And then she would be like, no, no, no. And start like justifying herself and come back. And it's just like, if I'm true to myself, I could just see through experience, through time, that I could just get away with so much and girls would almost respect it more if I'm just like true to myself.
Yeah, that's a really important point, and that's the difference between like consistently generating attraction, I think, a lot of the time, versus guys who are kind of doing the nice guy thing. They're way too agreeable. They, you know, they want that connection. They're forcing the connection instead of just being like, I'm gonna entertain myself. Like, if she says something stupid, I'm all over that. Like,
I'm gonna call her out.
Yeah. What? Are you kidding me? Like, is your brain broken? Yeah. And it's most men like never do that, and especially to beautiful women. So when a beautiful woman gets like called out and put on the spot, it's like, you know, very uncharted waters for them most of the time. So they're going to remember you. Like one little comment. I remember one of my girlfriends, I literally the thing that got her attracted to me was she, I was having an after party at my place. I had met her earlier at a nightclub and, you know, but there was so many people there and like I had some status and we knew each other's mutual friends, but like I didn't really try to talk to her or anything. It's too loud, right? I knew if I tried to do that, I'd be like, you know, overinvesting. I knew I was having the after party. She came back. So she was writing people's names on like those red solo cups. And she wrote Robbie on it, but she spelled it R-O-B-B-Y instead of I-E. And I looked at it and I'm like, and I threw it. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, you spelled my name wrong. And I walked away. And like the look on her face, she was just like, oh, I can't believe you just did that. And that's what got her. You know, that was the thing. We ended up like, you know, she started kind of following me around and giving me love. And then, you know, we ended up like she had a boyfriend, but we ended up like, you know, hooking up that night. We didn't have sex, but I, you know, did some tongue magic, some countdown magic on her and got her to have a few orgasms. And then she pretty much sticking around after that, after she broke up with her boyfriend a few months later, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, just as an example of breaking rapport.
It's actually funny because, so I got even my first girl was through approaching. I was that bad. I couldn't even get like one girl without it. That's kind of, I went in there. It's hard to tell, but.
Like your very first like sex experience?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
So you were a virgin up until you were like in the game.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yes.
Oh.
That's crazy. And yeah. The funniest thing was it was a 1 week trip to Bulgaria with, we were literally, I think, 12 dudes. It was the whole, this sort of approaching thing, and we did this like one trip there to, you know, go to a different city because we felt like where we were all staying, there wasn't that many girls. So we tried to go to a different city. And the reason why we chose Bulgaria was totally just because of the cost. It was, we flew there Ryanair, like cheap ass, we had a big place, but it was really cheap, divided by 13, and also like the price is way smaller. It was kind of like we just wanted to approach for 1 week, and it was during that week that I met a girl and then went on a date with, and she liked me, and then we at some point hooked up. And I remember I tried twice and I couldn't fuck her because I couldn't get my dick inside, and then I had to ask one of the other guys like, fuck, I suck. And he was like, no, buy lube and then try it again. Like, that's how I lost my virginity. So I don't know. I think it was maybe before that trip, something like maybe 9 months or something. But to be really honest, I was horrible at doing the approach. It was zero structure. It was a shooting a shotgun without aim, hoping that somewhere I would hit something. It was bad. I think even like after, if you ask me like a year in the game or something to get a new girl, I don't know. It depends on how many approaches you do, but maybe at that point like 50 to 100 approaches to get one new girl. Like, I don't know. I would say, yeah, maybe like 50. It depends. It's obviously harder to get a hotter girl. But if you just count the approaches where they actually stop, you know, some of them have a boyfriend. Some will just not give you your number. Some might go on a date but not do anything. I would say something like 50 or 60 approaches, and then whatever time you need to get those reps in. Like if you can do that in a week, then I would say it takes a week. If you need like a month, then a month. For me, it was just, no, I mean, I had a week where I would get 40 rejections and I was like, fuck, I suck. And then I would take a week off, not do any approaches, maybe even 2 weeks off. But then, you know, I was just like, okay, well, then I would kind of get to my senses and be like, well, I'm at zero anyways, so might as well go out. I think what helped me a lot is to have a wingman, which I also think why The group is great because you can like potentially find wingmen, or like maybe in your city there's also like other groups or something. I remember when I started, I felt it was easier to do it with somebody else than on my own. The other thing where I just felt I was stuck is I couldn't really get with eights and above before doing the immersion, to be honest. I just didn't know how, and I didn't believe it. And I think it takes a bit of just taking risks and really just forcing yourself to kind of like punch through that wall, because once you're through it, you just naturally built that inner confidence. If you like hooked up with like four or five girls who you think were insanely hot, then it just like builds a confidence. Like, well, like going from 5 to 6 or from 10 to 11 is a lot easier than from 0 to 1 hot girl.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the two things where I felt stuck. But
I remember, just to give my 2 cents, I remember feeling really stuck before I learned day game, because when I got into it, like, no one was really doing day game. I was just going out to the bars, and it was very similar to the sort of bar experience here in Austin, Texas, which is fucking terrible. It's so difficult because there's just like so many dudes, and the girls are drunk, and it's cock blocks everywhere, and you know, it's just like very hard to like create attraction and then get that interaction to like move forward. There's just getting, girls are just like vanishing out of thin air all the time. Like, you have to be really, really good to get anything to like stick. And that's what I was doing. I was going out a lot in San Diego. I was chubby, and that wasn't helping because, you know, you're competing against like a bunch of frat boys and crazy dudes, and they know each other, and a lot of people are going out in their social circle, like, you know, like. And it wasn't until I started doing day game and getting consistent dates, that's when I kind of had that like breakthrough, similar to what you were talking about, was, you know, being able to escalate, knowing when to go for the kiss, and having that recurring sort of like, you know, building that roster, I guess, of girls. So.
Roster. That's my favorite new word I learned this
the
week.
Roster.
So when I started, I preferred day game because I didn't feel confident enough during night game. Right now, I really like night game because... So I think right now it's 50-50, but I think I really enjoy myself when I go out during the night, because it's just kind of like a... How do you say, more fun environment, like, especially if it's really good music, I enjoy myself, I feel very confident, I feel like you can have a high, I feel like if you're good, you just have a higher probability of a same night late. So it's like, day game, it's like, yeah, you can also have a same night late, but it's, or same day late, but it also kind of depends on the girl's schedule. If the girl's already out, you know, taking her to an after party, she's already going out to have fun, meet guys, so it's, I feel like it's easier to like pull a girl home the same night. So
especially if you're doing what you're doing, which is a hybrid night game social circle thing, because yeah. You know, it's like you have a dope spot to take girls back to. Exactly. Guys who are willing to like set up a party out of thin air, you know, so it's like, it's not just pure, I have a one-bedroom apartment, I'm going out to meet girls at bars and try to pull them home alone. You know, that's a much different thing than what you're doing. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, also, I enjoyed myself this week because we obviously have a great view, and I have that on my Instagram. And then sometimes it just, in the conversation, I always make sure to exchange Instagram in the middle, not at the end when she's leaving. It's kind of like a chase move. Always it naturally comes up somewhere in the middle of the conversation. I'm like, oh, I'm going to accidentally show you this story where I have this dope view so that she has the picture. And it's like, well, I want to see that view. So then, you know, she's like, well, and literally if a girl's like, I'm not sure. I'm like, look, you can leave at any point, but how about you come and make a story of the view? And then like, oh, yeah, sure. Do you have tequila? I'm like, yeah, we have all the booze there, whatever. So to answer your question, I started not liking Night Game and now I start really liking it. But I also recognize, I think it takes maybe more confidence.
It's harder for sure.
It's harder because you have more competition.
Yeah. And you're got a lot of competition from groups and girls going out
Yeah.
with their own social circle. So I've seen this both with myself and with all the guys I've successfully coached. It's like day game is easier because there's less variables. The simple equations, you and the girl, you meet her later for a date, you take her through a series of dates, and you kind of book those wins when you have those experiences. With night game, there's just so many different variables and things being thrown at you. If you don't already have like a pretty solid level of confidence and ability to like be present, stay in that moment, know like logistically how to pull things off, you're just not really going to get much results out of it. And you're going to spend money and get fat and want
Yeah.
to eat a lot of late night food if you're drinking. And so yeah.
Not that day game is easy, especially at the beginning. You still have to work through that anxiety, but
Totally. Nothing's easy, unfortunately.
exactly.
It all is difficult until it's not. So,
But yeah,
yeah.
only the hard things are valuable.
Yeah.
That's why they're hard to get.
So, how do you kind of make the transition from going out to do like day game sessions,
Yeah.
and that's how you're doing it, to making it a normal part of your life?
I think if you hit a certain number of approaches, you lose your anxiety to a point that, like, when I walk down the street and I want to go like shopping or I'm on the way somewhere and then I see a hot girl, I'm like, I just feel really motivated to just say hi because I know I can do it. And it's before, it was like, oh, I have this sort of like anxiety, I need five warm-up approaches to like come up with something witty. Just after a certain time, you just feel so confident that you're like, hey, I like can't talk to this girl, I don't need a warm-up. So I literally do the hook and swim. I'm like, hi, 2 seconds, I'm going to the mall right now to buy like find a pair of new white pants. But you're really beautiful, so I just had to come and say hi. It's literally the exact same thing as day game. It's just that I felt more comfortable doing these one-offs randomly when I saw a hot girl. I also think it's important for you to also set times where you're like, okay, I'm not gonna force myself to do something. So one of the questions I had to that other coach was, well, how do I know when I pussy out of an approach or like when I'm not doing one? And he actually recommended for the beginning to do sessions because then it's like, okay, you have to do approaches, and then your normal life, you just like don't approach because, if you're actually running somewhere and you have like an appointment, you don't want to be late just because you saw a hot girl. But obviously, if you're just walking around, then you should approach. So I think it's just getting to a level of comfort that even if it's your first approach, it's still good enough.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you got to start with the sessions. You got to make it
Yeah.
a thing that you're going to do. And then it slowly just kind of becomes your lifestyle because you start to realize after doing enough sessions, when you're past the like overwhelming anxiety stage, when you're really just like, please just give me a hot girl to approach. Like
Yeah.
there's no one here and it's frustrating. And then when you're just out in your everyday life and you see a beautiful girl walk by, you're just like, I'm not gonna let this opportunity pass
Exactly.
myself up because I've spent so much time like waiting around for it. So you're just
Yeah.
gonna like, you're like, hell no, I'm not gonna let her walk by. Like I'd be an idiot. So
Yeah.
that was really the transition for me. It was like doing enough sessions eventually unlocked the ability to just kind of do it all the time. Guys, Guillaume, it's been amazing.
Let's go. Thanks.
Thank you guys for your questions and
Yeah, if you have more, we have weekly calls. We also
post them
have
in
the group. Exactly.
the
Post in the group. Ask me on the weekly calls.
Yep. All right,
And
guys.
yeah, for those of you who are here, see you, come over.
Peace out.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.